Hello everyone, my name is Rahul Karna. I am one of the associate editors for the ACG Case Reports Journal. I would like to welcome you to our podcast, Behind the Case, an ACG Case Reports Journal podcast, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, among others. Each month, we highlight a case published in the journal to recognize the contribution of authors, engage in discussion, and provide valuable teaching points to our readers. This month's podcast focuses on a case highlighting successful endoscopic ultrasound-guided radiofrequency ablation for symptomatic insulinoma in a high-risk elderly patient. I would like to give a warm welcome and introduction to the lead author of this case, Dr. Larry Adhaniran, and content expert, Dr. Shailendra Singh. Dr. Larry Adhaniran is a third-year internal medicine resident and incoming GI fellow at West Virginia University. His research interests span general gastroenterology with focus on pancreatobiliary diseases and obesity. Outside of medicine, Dr. Adhaniran is passionate about community engagement and enjoys outdoor activities, volunteering, and spending meaningful time with family and friends. Thank you so much, Dr. Adhaniran, for joining. Dr. Shailendra Singh is the Director of Advanced Therapeutic Endoscopy, Director of Bariatric Endoscopy, and Associate Professor of Medicine at West Virginia University in Morgantown, West Virginia. His clinical and research interests include pancreatobiliary diseases, endoscopic ablation, and endoscopic treatment of obesity. Dr. Singh is recognized as one of the national leaders in advanced endoscopic therapies, including endoscopic ablative treatments such as radiofrequency ablation and endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty for weight loss. He serves as principal investigator on multiple ongoing clinical trials evaluating endoscopic ultrasound-guided ablative therapies and duodenal ablation technologies for metabolic disease. Dr. Adhaniran, Dr. Singh, welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for taking time out to do this. All right, let's get into the article. Dr. Adhaniran, can you please give us an overview of the case and key findings for the listeners?
Of course, Dr. Karna. Thank you for the warm introduction and for organizing this session. And also thank you to Dr. Singh for gracing the invitation and joining us for the session. So personally, I was excited to be a part of this case. It was an interesting case. So we have an 80-year-old male with significant comorbidities, including advanced ischemic cardiomyopathy, who presented with 6 months of recurrent hypoglycemia episodes. This presented as multiple falls and dizziness and confusion. So presented to our ICU very weak and intermittently confused, especially during the hypoglycemia episodes. So the first thing we did was to resuscitate the patient with IV glucose. And after resuscitation, we quickly ruled out possible differentials like exogenous insulin use, exogenous sulfonylurea use, or starvation and all that. So after that, we performed a supervised 72-hour fast that confirmed elevated insulin level, elevated pro-insulin level, as well as elevated C-peptide level. And these findings were concerning for an endogenous hyperinsulinemic hypoglycemia. After these findings, we suspected something in the pancreas. So we performed a triple phase spiral CT scan with a pancreatic protocol that shows a 12 by 18 millimeter pancreatic mass. And at this time, we invited our advanced gastroenterology team who performed an endoscopic ultrasound fine needle biopsy. And upon visualization, they found an hypoechoic mass. And the biopsy was consistent with a pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, specifically a WHO grade 1 pancreatic insulinoma. So given this patient's age and comorbidities and very high frailty index, he was ruled out for surgery. So a multidisciplinary decision was made to address this via a minimally invasive approach. So we consulted Dr. Singh, who performed an EUS radiofrequency ablation of this lesion. And upon successful ablation, the patient was transferred back to the ward, and over 48 hours, his glucose level normalized, clinical status improved significantly, the intermittent confusion that we noticed during hypoglycemia episodes were no more there. Also, the serum insulin level, pro-insulin level, and C-peptide normalized, and the patient was discharged 72 hours after the procedure. So we have continued to follow up this patient now 24 months post-procedure. At 3 months, we performed a PET CT that showed no activity at this pancreatic lesion level. At 6 months, we repeated the EUS that showed an ablated lesion. PET scan was repeated at 9 months, that was unremarkable. And between that time and 24 months post-procedure, the patient has remained asymptomatic.
Thank you so much for your wonderful summary, Dr. Adhaniran. Dr. Singh, can you shed some light on what endoscopic ultrasound-guided radiofrequency ablation entails, and what is the learning curve associated with the technique for advanced endoscopists who want to learn this technique and procedure?
First of all, thank you, Rahul, and the ACG team for having us on this podcast. So what is EUS-guided ablation is an exciting evolution in addition to therapeutic endoscopy. So what specifically is EUS-guided radiofrequency ablation? Uses a 19-gauge EUS ablation needle, which has an active tip. That tip comes in various sizes, ranging from 5mm, 7mm, and 10mm. Depending on the size of the lesion, that tip can be selected. So this is a monopolar current. So this needle is connected to an RF radio frequency generator as well as to grounding. One important safety feature with this needle is also there is cold water, ice water that runs through the through this needle that will prevent any excessive burning or charring through this. And then secondly, it's controlled by the impedance. Impedance is kind of is a measure of resistance to heat. So when the impedance goes higher at a certain level, usually 300, 400, that's when we stop the ablation. So first of all, how this procedure is done, similar to an endoscopic ultrasound, like a fine needle biopsy, will kind of identify the lesion, get in a good position, look for any intervening vessels, relation to pancreatic duct, and other structures. If it's in the head of the pancreas, looking in for the bile duct and relation to the bile duct. Then under direct EUS visualization, this needle, 19-gauge needle, is inserted in the lesion itself, and it can be ablated using the radio frequency current. And it is controlled by impedance. That means when the impedance goes up, that's when we stop ablating. So the learning curve with this procedure depends on your expertise with EUS, especially for people who are doing therapeutic EUS or doing interventional EUS. This is kind of a natural progression. But I think what is also more important is patient selection, post-procedure follow-up, and this has to be done in a multidisciplinary team where this can be a additional tool in the armamentarium of therapeutic endoscopy devices.
Thank you so much, Dr. Singh, for a fantastic summary and the technical details of the procedure. Going on to the patient selection, what is your approach for pancreatic lesions in high-risk surgical candidates, and where does EUS radiofrequency ablation fit into the current available tools for ablation of pancreatic lesions?
I agree, this has to be done in a multidisciplinary fashion in your tumor board, where surgeons and oncologists also have to review these cases. So our patient selection process is we present them in our multidisciplinary conference, and then I think we review the images clearly to look for any intervening blood vessels or adjacent structures such as large blood vessel or the pancreatic duct. So where I think we are going, this therapy with the US guided ablation is continues to evolve, right? So we have right now patients who have functional neuroendocrine tumor and especially not a surgical candidate. I think this is an excellent modality. And even I think with this case, which Len represented, you saw that with the US guided ablation, it kind of acted as an emergent treatment for a functional neuroendocrine tumor where we could do minimally invasive therapy that can prevent these hypoglycemic episodes. So I think it's an excellent pool for functional neuroendocrine tumors. Then I think we move on to maybe on to moderate, grade 2 or grade 3 tumors and patients who are not, have neuroendocrine tumors and who are not surgical candidates. We are doing a lot of ablations for those patients as well. And then I think in grade 1, smaller tumors where you have the option of doing surveillance versus there are some patients who are not comfortable with surveillance, we are performing ablations for them as well. But having said this, I think this all needs to be learned, looked more closely. So we do have a prospective study and we collect the data for these patients prospectively. But I can say it's it has to be done with caution, but otherwise a very safe and effective procedure for neuroendocrine tumor. Recently, what we have also been doing US-guided ablation is for metastatic lesions within the pancreas, where such as a metastatic renal cell carcinoma, where the primary tumor is not there and we just see mets in the pancreas. And we have used US-guided ablations or other ablative therapies such as microwave ablation to treat these metastatic RCC, and we have seen some excellent outcomes even on a follow-up up to 9 to 12 months in these patients. And then I think the area of interest for research for me, and there is some ongoing work at UT, University of Texas, Houston, as well as is utilizing these US-guided ablations for treatment of pancreatic adenocarcinomas. So again, we trying to study that prospectively. That also needs to be more clinical trials in that area. And these treatments, I'll say, like to mention that these treatments are in addition to the chemotherapy, the surgical treatment, and does not replace any of those therapies. So our protocol has been that with between the sessions of chemotherapy, we are performing US-guided ablations for adenocarcinoma patients as well, and are trying to prospectively collect data for them, especially in regard to their survival.
Thank you so much, Dr. Singh. This was an incredible podcast. I've learned so much from the case and attending the podcast with Dr. Singh and Dr. Lanagay, and I would like to thank you for submitting to the journal and taking time out to go beyond the case with us. To our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Please subscribe to the podcast, and I look forward to meeting all of our listeners and audience at the ACG National Meeting in Nashville later this year. Thank you so much.